Morning, Rabbi Sai. So yesterday the speaker arrived late, so I had to carry on into unprepared territory. Uncharted waters. So I quoted you a Gemara, and I mentioned we started speaking about the next one of the Arsori Harugi Malchus, Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinai. And first of all, I started by quoting a Gemara again. It was unprepared, and therefore I wasn't accurate. I just wanted to correct a couple of things. First of all, I said it was in Yevamos Daf Samach Beis Omer Beis, and it's in Kesubos Daf Samach Beis Omer Beis. It's first thing, first correction. Second correction was that we spoke of Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinai, that after 12 or 13 years of learning in the yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva, he came home and he didn't know where his house was. It wasn't quite right. His house was exactly where it was previously. But Rashi says that they'd done a lot of building work. They diverted streets and they built over other places that were previously open. And therefore he simply couldn't find his way to his house because the streets, the layout had changed. I also said that his daughter became a colour. It was not quite right. What happened was that his wife wrote him a letter saying that our eldest daughter is now of marriageable age, and therefore we need a father here in order to help to arrange a shidduch. And therefore he came home, and he came home in response to that. She wasn't expecting him to come home, and therefore the rest of it is true, that she had a heart attack when she saw him, and she collapsed and she died, and then he was mispal for her, the Gemara says, v'hechio, and he brought her back to life, or the Rabbi Nishon brought her back to life, and he was zoche tchias ha-mesim. So this is Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinai, who is one of the Asor HaRoge Malchus, according to 7 out of 10 of the texts, according to 5 out of 8 of the Nesuchos, the texts that we're dealing with. And it says, v'achrav ha-tzius Rabbi Chanina ben Chachinai, this is the second case that we've got of being Erev Shabbos. So from the age of 18 until the age of 95, so he was now 95 years old when he was brought in front of the Roman governor for execution. He was 95 years old, and every day he had been fasting. Omer lo Talmidov, and this Talmidim said, it's a tradition in prison on death's row that you have a last meal. You can choose exactly what you want as the last meal before the execution. Rebbe, Ritzoincha shetitoin klum koidem shetehorig. Maybe you'd like to eat something before he was fasting. Omar lahem, he said, Adato hisanesi. Veloy ochalti, veloy shosisi. Vato eini yodea ezaderech eilech. And now I'm about to die and I don't know where they're going to be taking me. And there's nothing more important for me to do before I die than to eat and to drink. Hischil b'kiddush hayoim. Yeah, it said that they took him out to Erev Shabbos. He started saying kiddush hayoim. V'echula ha-shamayim ad v'yikadesh o'isoi. We had another one who was saying kiddush. He died by asher boro elekim la'asoi. So when he said elekim, this one died by nivus va'yikadesh o'isoi. V'lo yinichu ligma ad she'al guhu. And they didn't allow him to finish kiddush before he was executed. V'yotzo baskol v'oimeres ashrecho reb chanino ben chachinai. Blessed are you. Praised are you, Reb Chanina ben Chachinai, she'o yiso kodosh, in your life you were holy, v'yotso nishmos chobikdusho, betevas v'yikadesh. And your life, you left this world with the word v'yikadesh, bikdusho, and obviously he was mezumen l'chai ho'olam abo. That was Reb Chanina ben Chachinai, who is either the 7th or the 8th of the Asor HaRoge Malchus, and tomorrow, B'l'Neda, we will look at Rabbi Yeshevov HaSofer.
Started the editor away north us London Monday, Vov of 20th of July. Reharav Rav Toby Weiniger, Shlit, Rav of Hadleywood Jewish Community, and overview of Hilchus Kriyot. This week's Torah has been spontaneously Nishmas, Mesetel Basav Roma Kern, Olin Hashalom, Ziatat with La Shabbos, Olin Shmas, our esteemed founder, Yosef Dov Ben, Shim Machol Tzvi Itzkovitz, and Zechrono Livrochol.
Okay, good morning everybody. It's always a big zechus to be asked, and wonderful to be back. We're going to try and cover a few points today in the sugya of Hilchus Kriya, the laws of renting or tearing one's garments on the passing of a relative, close relative, one of the Sheva Koivim. And there's also other scenarios in Halacha where one is required to taqiyah, less commonly observed, and we're going to try and cover some of those as well. It's a very, very big topic, but we're going to try and make a few points and see where we go, Mitzvah Hashem. Why did I choose this topic? Because usually if I was asked to speak and I chose a topic in Hilchos Avelos, they'd probably never ask me to speak again. But this is a 1 week where one could probably get away with it. And not just that, it's almost appropriate. And it's a very, very, unfortunately, it's an area of halacha which is not as studied and can be very important to know. So we're going to try and make a few points. I also had a shaila in my rabbinic work last week in Hilchos Kriya, and I'll start with that. Maybe you listening think it's not such a complex shaila, but here you go, here's the shaila. So the shaila was as follows. I had a couple who were both very, very sick, and the husband unfortunately passed away, and the wife was in hospital. So we did kriya with the son. There were two sons, both married. Anyway, so we did kriya with the sons at the funeral. But what about the obligation for kriya of the wife who is in hospital? Does she have an obligation to tear kriya? So that was the shaila that came up last week, and we'll see. We'll at the end we'll get to what I think is the answer. Okay, so let's start. Kriya is one of the it's a very interesting thing, by the way, if you look at the structure of a levaya of Dinei Avelos, because some of the practices that we have are extraordinarily ancient. For example, the mitzvah or chiyuv of hesped goes all the way back to Avraham Avinu. This is an extraordinarily ancient and deep practice. And similarly, the obligation of kriya is not something which is... this isn't a late obligation. This is something which is very, very ancient. Again, we'll discuss shortly whether it's a chiyuv or mitzvah, d'rabbanan, d'oraisa, how exactly it is. But leis man d'polig, this is something which goes back all the way back to Chumash. Even before that. Yeah, so Yaakov Avinu, you know, I think, is the second example of Kriya and Chumash. The first example of Kriya and Chumash is just a few pesukim before that. I'll read. Vayashov Ruven el Abo, v'inei ein Yosef b'abo, v'yikwa b'gadov. When Ruven sees that Yosef isn't in the pit anymore, he tears Kriya. And then a few pesukim later, as you already point out, and this is an extraordinary pasuk, because it links kriya explicitly to Avelos, Vayikra Yaakov Simlotav, and Yaakov does kriya on his clothes, Vayasem Sak B'motnav, and he puts sackcloth on his loins, Vayitabel Abeno Yamim Abim, and he mourns, he observes Avelos for his son for many days. I believe, and I, this is just...
no.
Say?
Of course, doesn't say he did kriya.
Yeah, it doesn't. Correct. Torah doesn't. Yep, Torah doesn't say it. Maybe he did. You know? Maybe he did. I can't remember off the top of my head, I believe the Medrash brings that Yaakov actually observed full shiva there. But anyway, I haven't looked that up, so that I'm not saying with confidence. But the point is that there are examples in Chumash already of kriya taking place. Similarly, later on in Tanakh, there's examples of David HaMelech, Teren Kriya, etc. So this is a very, very early and ancient practice. It has two very interesting sources in the Gemara. So the Gemara Maya Kotan, Daf Kaf Dolad Amad Aleph, says as follows. Amarav Tochlifa Bar Avimi Amar Shmua. Ovel Shaloi Pera V'Shaloi Pirem Chayev Misa. An ovel, a mourner, who doesn't grow his hair out, and who also doesn't do kriya, pirem is to tear one's garments, chayev misa, is liable to the death penalty. I mean, wow, that's quite an extraordinary gemara. Right, very harsh. Chayev misa, the gemara says. Shene'ema, how do we know that an ovel is chayev misa if they don't do kriya? Brings a posuk from after the death of Nadav and Avihu, where Aaron communicates to the surviving sons of Elazar and Itamar. He says, "Vasheichem al tifra'u uvideichem lo tifra'u velo tamutu." So he says to them, "I don't, you know, they've died. Nadav and Avihu have died, and I don't want you to now get busy with Avelis. Why? Because we've got a Chanukah, we've got a celebration, inauguration of the Mikdash, of the Mishkan to do. I don't want you to do Avelis." And he gives them two examples of things he doesn't want them to do. He says, "Rasheichem al tifra'u," right? Don't let your hair grow long. And also, "Uvigdeichem lo tifra'u," don't tear kriya. In other words, "Veloy tamutu." And if you do those things, then you will be chay of misa. And therefore, the Gemara infers from that pasuk where Aaron says, "Don't do those things, otherwise you'd be chayv misa." That ha'ocher sheloi pora veloi shapurim. That now that a regular mourner who doesn't do those things, who doesn't let their hair grow long as one is required to, and their beard as one is required to, and also v'sheloi pirim, and who also doesn't perform kriya, then chayv misa. Then they are then they have a chayv misa. So, does this mean what does this mean, Chiyav Misa? So let's get there in a second. But there's another, so that's one source in the Gemara. So that's Daf Kaf Dolad Amud Aleph, that we learn from Nadav and Avihu, who were, after the death of Nadav and Avihu, that the remnants of the Bnei Aaron were told not to tear kriya, otherwise they would have a death penalty, that there's an obligation on everybody else to tear kriya with a consequence of a death penalty. That's number one. The number two, and this is a very, very powerful Gemara. So this is referring to a slightly different context. This isn't referring to a context of a death of a relative, right? Obviously, the surviving of the sons of Bnei Aaron were relatives of Nadav and Avihu. So it's not referring to a death of a relative. It's referring to a separate halacha, which is, and this is a halacha that's not observed. The poskim say the reason we don't observe this because basically ein ladav asof, there'd be no end in sight to this. But halacha, it's on the books in the Shulchan Aruch, that anybody who's present at the time of Yetzias Neshama, anybody who's present at the time of a death, should tear kriya. Why? And this is I think this is an unbelievable Gemara. Gemara says as follows, this is just a daf, this is a daf later in Gemara Moed Katan. One of those Gemaras, once you hear it, you look at the world differently. Gemara says, "Detanya, unbelievable, would be Shimon ben Elazar Omer, ha'oimeid al hameis b'shas yitzias neshama." If you're there, you're present at the time of a death, chayev likvaya. You are obligated to tear kriya. Lema ze doimer, what's this comparable to? Le sefer Torah shenisvav shechayev likvaya. It's comparable to a Sefer Torah that's burnt. If anyone's present at the time when the Sefer Torah is burnt, you're also obligated to tear kriya. And therefore, when a person dies, leaves this world, leaves the opportunity to do mitzvot and continue in the way of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, it's like a Sefer Torah shenisraf. Meaning, each of us in life is like, it's really mind-blowing Gemara, that each of us in life, through the mitzvahs that we can perform, through the acts of chesed, through kindness, through everything that we can do, through the Torah we learn, we're almost like living Sefer Torah. And when a person passes away, it's like a Sefer Torah shenisraf, because that potential for mitzvahs and chesed and everything goes. And just like a Sefer Torah shenisraf, if you're at that moment, chayev likvaya, so too, Gemara says, and this is brought down in Shulchan Aruch as well, as I said, it's not the minhag, it's not practiced nowadays, anybody who's present, b'shas yitzias neshama, is also chayev likvaya. So those are two Gemaras, one from Nadav and Avihu, we learn the chiyuv of kriya, and another one we learn from the Sefer Torah shenisraf. So again, just to summarize quickly what I said, we learn that kriya is a very, very ancient practice. It goes all the way back to the episode of Yosef, Reuven taught kriya, Yaakov taught kriya, and we saw two Gemaras. Again, one Gemara learns this from an episode in Chumash. So you can see this is a very, very ancient practice. So now the question is this a chiyuv d'oraisa or is it a chiyuv d'rabbanan? So the main source for this is a Rosh in Moed Katan who goes through the various options. And it's good to know, it's just good for Yedias HaTorah, there's a Ravid that holds that it's a chiyuv d'oraisa, min HaTorah. However, that's not accepted. What about all the Pesukim? So I'll read from you from what the Maharam says. So he says, "Ein nivel rabbeinu me'ezal." So he says why. He says two things. He gives two. So the Maharam, I'm just going to go through it quickly. He brings two arguments why this is not deraisa. This is drabonim. So number one, he says, "Ein nivel rabbeinu me'ezal." Lahach perusha shapirish de over shaloi pera v'shaloi purim chayv misa mid deraisa. Okay. By the way, most assume here we're not dealing with mitas based in. We're dealing with mita bidei shamayim. Still, it's not mita midah evaisa. Why? De imkain lech shere b'hade hanoch de b'misa b'beperek elu heina niswafim. Basically, he says, why if it was a misa midah evaisa, why doesn't it appear in any of the lists in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, which lists what one gets misa evaisa for? So he said, the Maharam explains that since it doesn't appear in those lists, therefore it can't clearly be a deraisa. He asks on himself, aye, what about Tana v'Shia? Meaning, why couldn't you have a case, right? We know from Mishnayos that sometimes the Mishnah brings not all of the cases that are applicable to the din. And the Gemara says, Tana v'Shia. In other words, that it's true that should have been part of the list, but for whatever reason it wasn't included in part of the list. So he says, no, it's a very, very interesting klal, rule he brings, that whenever a Mishnah in Shas starts with the word Elu, these are the things you never can say Tono v'Shia, according to the Maharam. You can never say, oh, he left it off. Because if the Mishnah starts with the word Elu, these are the definitive list, therefore you never say Tono v'Shia. So the first example, the first raya, the first proof that it's not Midoraisa, is that there's lists of what's Midoraisa, and all of those lists start with the word Elu, and it's not on that list. And therefore forget it, we're not dealing with a Dindoraisa. The other one he brings is he says, even though he brings a posuk, even though we learn Mal Tochlifa Amar Shmuel brings a posuk of Bnei Aaron, he says, "Ukra asmachta ba'almachi umita midivreihem ka'amar." We're just speaking about mita midivreihem, rabbinic mita. Now, what on earth does that mean? Truth is, requires further research. I don't really know, but I think it means some form of punishment at the hands of Rabbanan. We're not talking about mita bidei shamayim, and we're not talking about here a deraisa. So again, just to bring us back where we are, we've seen examples in Chumash of kriya. We've seen sources in the Gemara, two different Gemaras. And we've also seen that the majority of poskim hold that this is a chiyuv drabonen. There's still a very severe chiyuv drabonen with a penalty potentially of death, whatever that means. Okay, now what's the reason for the chiyuv of kriya? Why do we have such a chiyuv? So, there's a very interesting Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos who says as follows. Now, we know... So the Rambam is speaking about the Issa of Koreya on Shabbos, tearing on Shabbos. And the Rambam says as follows. This is in Hilchos, if you want to look it up, it's in Hilchos Shabbos. It's Yud Yud. So it's, you can look it up. So the Rambam says as follows. HaKoreya lahafsoda potter mipnei shehu mekalka. If one tears with the intent to ruin... Right, Makalkal is to ruin. Then one is potter, you are exempt. Why? Because it's not meleches machsheves, right? It's not a creative activity. It's something which is destructive in nature, and therefore it's makalka, right? It's destructive. It's not creative, and therefore one is exempt. You're potter. You're exempt as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned. But now he says, Hakoreya b'chamasoi. What if one tears kriya on Shabbos? Right. By the way, it's a big sugya. I mean, not huge sugya, but there is a discussion in the poskim about whether one should tear kriya on Shabbos. Halacha is we don't. There are views that say you can, but we should. But the Rambam certainly is not one of them. Hakoreya b'chamasoi. The Rambam says if one does kriya out of anger, or al meis shehu chayav likoy alav, or out of a sense of obligation, a meis shehu chayav likoy alav. Right, somebody who's died that he is obligated to tear kriya on, chayev, then one is chayev as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned. In other words, that's a full breaking of Shabbos if one does kriya on Shabbos. Why? But isn't it makalkal? Isn't it destructive? You just said anybody who tears kriya on Shabbos, amenas lahaf soda, for a loss, is makalkal. Aye, so then why did he say if you do kriya because of an avelus, you're chayev on Shabbos? Right? You just said if it's makalkal, you're potter. So the Rambam says an unbelievable thing, and this is a big yesod for why we have kriya in the first place. It says mipnei shemiyashiv et daito b'davazeh, because kriya is an act where you're soothing your own anger via nuach yitzrei, and you're calming your inclination. V'hoyo v'chamosay sheicheches b'davazeh hari hu k'metokin v'chayev. Unbelievable thing. Right, so since you're settling your mind and soothing your anger and calming your natural inclination through tearing kriya, it's as if you're metakein, it's as if it's actually a constructive action, and therefore you're chayav as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned.
Maybe it's a bit like Tannis Chalom on
Go on.
Shabbos. That's the Yashin him, and therefore...
Right. Yeah, very nice. Very, very nice. The Torah Tamima also brings down, based on this, he uses this, I think, as a raya, is why don't we say that kriya is osa? Why don't we say it bal tashkes? So he says, again, that it's not bal tashkes because you're dealing with a positive outcome. Bal tashkes is something which is wanton. The destruction is wanton. It's completely negative. There's no good outcome from the bal tashkes. But here you're dealing with something which has a positive outcome. What could that positive outcome be? So you can bring in the reasoning of the Rambam that it's the calming of that inclination and the anger being soothed. Whether in practice, if you ask Avelim, do you find kriya a therapeutic experience or not? I don't know. I've never asked anyone. I've not done a survey. It'd be an interesting question. But that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that there is some psychological benefit to the act of kriya. What are some other reasons for the obligation of kriya? So it symbolizes the broken heart. I suppose we'll discuss this in a second, that there's differences between for a parent and for other relatives, but for the loss of a parent, one tears kriya on their left side, right? Like that's the side where one puts on tefillin, the same reason that it's keneged halev, it's for the heart. And you also, the shiel, meaning the amount that one tears, is ad shemagala et libri, until one exposes one heart. That's for a parent, not for other relatives. So again, that's an extremely, extremely powerful halacha, right? That the whole point is it's symbolizing the broken heart, just like you've got the broken shirt or the broken jacket. We'll see in a second. On the left hand side over the heart. So that's symbolizing. We'll take question. It's symbolizing the broken heart and it's symbolizing the anguish. Yeah.
Women usually put
a safety pin. Yeah. That's right, and that's for reasons of sneers. Yeah, exactly. Other reasons I've heard, but I haven't found a makor necessarily, is the kriya is permanent, obviously. The shirt's not coming back. The Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch actually discusses at what point can you sew it back, right? You're dealing with a society where people had fewer clothes. So it's a very, very interesting question. How long can you do it after the Shloshim? Do you have to wait a year after Shiva? All of these questions. But now, we don't sew the shirts back. That's just, that, sorry? Yeah, chucked in the bin, it's gone. But so now it's even easier to relate to the fact that kriya is symbolizing a permanent rupture, and just as there's been a permanent rupture in a person's life, so too we have a physical manifestation and a physical expression of that on our clothing of a permanent rupture, and the fact that the world simply won't be the same again. Okay, a couple more points. So there's a difference in halacha between kriya for a parent and kriya for other relatives. And we'll just run through the differences. We'll just run through some of the differences. Okay, so first of all, just some general points in terms of the halacha. So kriya has to be done standing. That's a very, very serious halacha. Has to be done standing. There's a bracha. Now, this causes a lot of confusion. There's an impression that this is a bilchus hamitzvah, so to speak, on the kriya. It's not true. It's a bracha, baruch dayin ha'emes. The Gemara says, b'shem shemavalkan ala to, kach mavalkan ala ra. It's a bracha that one says at that time, and it's often associated with kriya, but it doesn't strictly have to be done before. It can be done after as well. The bracha of dayin ha'emes. There's a halacha that you shouldn't, that someone else should start the tear. Why is that? Because there's a greater busha, there's a greater sense of embarrassment or anguish if somebody else is ripping your clothes, right? If you decide to rip your clothes, that's one thing, that's bad enough. But somebody else is coming to rip your clothes, that's obviously a very, very serious thing. Some other halachas that apply, whether it's a parent or other relatives, it should start at the neck, or the neck of a garment. And the tear should be vertical. Shouldn't be horizontal, it needs to be vertical. In practice, you don't always see it done right, partly because it's quite difficult to control, and partly because people don't know. But there you go. But that's why we try and learn a bit, and then we can have more success of doing it correctly. Other halacha that's applicable is that one is able to change your shirt. Right? You don't have to tear kriya in the shirt that you're wearing. So if you've got, you know, a beautiful, you know, Armani or whatever shirt that you love and it costs an absolute fortune, then you don't have to ruin that shirt. You're allowed to tear kriya it on a different shirt. That is halacha. However, and this is one different, this is the first difference between kriya for a parent, for ovaim, and kriya for another relative. And again, I don't know how widely this is observed in practice, but this is certainly the halacha, that if during the shiva one changes a shirt, for shiva for a parent, one should do kriya on a shirt that they've changed into, whereas for other relatives, you don't need to tear kriya on that second shirt. What are some other differences between ovaim and other relatives? So this is all brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. There's a difference between doing it privately and in public. Some say that just doing it at a funeral site is considered public. It doesn't need to be like in front of loads of people. But the words used are barabim. Also the length of the kriya. So for other relatives, it just needs to be a tefach, right, which is about 8 to 10 centimetres. And for a parent, it needs to be, as we said, ad shemagole et liboy, until one exposes one's heart. The key difference between a parent and other relatives is also the side that one tears kriya on. If it is a parent, one tears kriya on the left-hand side of one's shirt or jacket, and that's, again, the side of the heart. If it's another relative, one tears kriya on the right-hand side. Furthermore, there's another difference between the number of garments. If one is wearing multiple garments, for pets, you don't tear kriya ever on a garment worn for perspiration, right? So like a vest or something, or an overcoat or a sweater, but any other garments. If it's a parent, you tear on all of them. If it's another relative, you only tear on the most outer one. Further difference, I think final difference, is whether you can use a kli or not, right? Scissors. So if it's a other relative, if other shakroven for other relatives, one is able to use a scissors or I don't know what else you would use, a penknife, whatever it is. But for parents, even though you can start the tear with a implement, with a vessel, one needs to actually use one's hand. Why? I think it's an extraordinarily powerful thing. That it's a much, you know, you're doing it yourself, it's a much more excruciating, anguish-filled moment. So it's a very, very powerful thing, by the way, I think, you know, my humble opinion, that there's such major differences here in halacha between kriya for a parent and kriya for other relatives. There's not one dip, there's a number of significant differences. I think that's a very, very powerful thing. Okay. There's other times that one tears kriya as well. Now, these are not the minhag is now to not observe these ones. I mean, we'll see one exception that is more observed. For various reasons, another case, maybe we could, I don't know if it would be so popular to do a kriya part two, it was a stretch enough to do a kriya part one, but we can go into the reasons why these are not all necessarily done, but the Gemara has other ones. So for example, a primary Torah teacher, one tears kriya for, that's a halot, that says in the Gemara, or for the Nasi, the Av Beis Din, also tears kriya from. Any bad news, one tears kriya. Any time where there's a chilul Hashem. Any time where a sefer Torah is burnt, right? We just discussed that one. And then this is the one we'll end with. And this is a very interesting discussion about how much it's practiced now. I'll quote now from the Shulchan Aruch. So he says, Haroya Ore Yehuda B'chobonon. Anybody who sees Ore Yehuda in their destruction. You say, right, your holy cities have become a desert, become desolate, and then you want to ask kriya. And similarly, one who sees Yushalayim in its bechorbanon, you also do the same thing. And also when you see the Beis HaMikdash, the Mokom HaMikdash, one also tears kriya. So, question is, if one goes to those areas in Eretz Yisrael, should one tear kriya? It's a very interesting shaila, and one should ask their local rav. I'll just share two points about it, and then which leads back to the shaila which I opened with. The first one is, some say there's a get out. Right, there's two potential get outs there. One get out is you could be makna your beged to somebody else, and then you don't own it, and then you don't have to tear kriya. Now this, why am I telling you this? So I've got here a beautiful sefer, the Pesachei Shavuos, and he says this doesn't work. He says it's a complete joke. Why? Because it's not a proper kinyan. In order for there to be a kinyan, there has to be a serious mindset for a transfer of ownership. And here, because the whole kinyan is taking place in order to avoid a halakhic obligation, that's not the mindset for a transfer of ownership that's required in halacha. And he says the whole thing is a haroma and it doesn't work. Why am I bringing this? Because this is the answer to the shaila that I started with. Right, last week I had a wife of somebody who was in hospital, who was in Avelis. So does she tear kriya on the hospital gown? So the halacha is she doesn't. Why? Because she doesn't own it. And that is a legitimate application of this din. If you don't own the beged, then you don't tear kriya. Right? As opposed to an illegitimate application of this din, which is the haroma that you don't have a full kinyan. The final point that's brought in the poskim, which is very interesting, is the Beis Yosef. Again, it all starts really with the Beis Yosef, that you don't tear kriya on the Orei Yehuda. I mean, really, the discussion is by the Orei Yehuda, if it's under Jewish control. If it's under Jewish control, but it's not under Jewish control, then you tear kriya. So after 67, there those, Shlomo Goren, and there were others that said, no, it's under Jewish control, obligation doesn't subsist anymore. It's a bit complicated because the actual source for the Beis Yosef's discussion is about Orei Yehuda, I think, not by... Sorry? This is the thing, And most contemporary post-game, you know, including with Moshe Sternberg, others say this is not, it's not, one still needs to require, one still needs to tear kriya at this stage, and the level of control and ownership and relationship that we have to Yerushalayim and Beis HaMikdash is still far from sufficient to discharge this. Number one, it's not Orei Yehuda. That's one reason why not. But even without that argument, still one can argue that the level of control, ownership, and connection to that area is not. It simply doesn't meet the threshold to get rid of that obligation or kriya anyway. And that is, as I understand it, the position of most contemporary poskim. As well, we pray obviously that one day we will have the Binyan HaMikdash in its correct and beautiful place, and there'll be none of these obligations anyway. I wish everybody, you know, a beautiful, uplifting, I don't know if beautiful is the right word, but an uplifting and meaningful Tisha B'Av. Mi'etz Hashem, Mashiach, the kingdom will come. This will be the last time we have to mark it anyway. Wishing everybody a good day. Very good.